From Gimlet Media, this is The Nod. I'm Eric Eddings.
And I'm Brittany Luce.
So, in this week's episode, we're going to be dishing out some shout-outs.
Shout-outs.
To some things that we love. Sadly, not Popeyes in this case.
Not Popeyes today. Today.
Today, yeah, exactly.
Not this coming episode. Soon. Mm-hmm.
But some things that we do love. One of them is funny.
True.
And one of them is a little more, like, poignant.
Also true.
But they're both great.
So later in this episode, Eric, you know, who I think he would like to be referred to as an internationally renowned tastemaker.
It's my true title.
Your true title, sure. Anyway, he is going to give a shout out to something that he just, like, can't stop thinking about. But first, we are going to listen to a shout out from a very close friend of the show. One of Eric's best friends, a young man named John. What you may hear registering in Eric's voice, and what you might remember, is that during our Buy Black episode, when, you know, Eric and I had a scavenger hunt, had to go to Black businesses, John actually gave me a leg up on the competition. He gave me a tip on a Black beauty supply store that sold Black do-rags, and Eric feels some type of way about that.
For the sake of this episode, I'm going to ignore the sense of betrayal that I feel in my heart. But yes, what you said is true. John is one of my best friends.
He is.
We have been friends since middle school, actually. And the other day, he hit me up because he had something that he felt that he has to tell our listeners about that changed his life.
If you want to go from eating ramen noodle dinners to Peter Luger's on a Tuesday, I would say there's one thing you must have. And I'm going to tell you about it. When I first got to New York, I didn't have much. And, you know, I'm a young kid. I'm just, you know, trying to make it day to day. I was dead broke, man. I had nothing. I was literally sleeping on a futon that was full of dog hairs. And I would think my internship, I was making like $6. It's the New York grind, man. It was hell. Like, it honestly sucked, you know, not knowing where your next meal was coming from, you know, loading up on ramen noodles, eating oatmeal that my mom provided in a care package. It was sad, man, like, so depressing, dude. It was a low point in my life, you know. I was a little depressed. There was a young lady in my life, named Lauren Hill, not the singer, who I was definitely in that friend zone with. She was always there for me while I was struggling. If I needed someone to talk to, we've been best of friends since the 11th grade. But I never wanted to mess up that friendship with Lauren. Some things are just so valuable, you choose not to risk them. So here's the thing, man. When you're in New York, you see all these nicely dressed people. And I worked in advertising, so these people have a lot of style and they have a lot of swagger. So my style at the time was more so whatever I could catch on the TJ Maxx clearance section. And I just realized, man, one day it just hit me. It's like, man, while clothes don't make the man, you got to start dressing for the job you want. So while I was interning, I was like, you know what? I want them to hire me full time. So one of the simplest things for me to do at the time was to try to go and find something in my favorite store. I went to Macy's and I go into Macy's. I'm walking up and, you know, you pass the regular, like, you pass, like, Nautica, Tommy Hilfiger, and then you hit the polo section, but then you get, like, the traditional polo, and then you go to the end, you see, like, Denim Supply. And I saw these, like, illuminated white jeans. Like, they just called for me. When I saw those jeans, my mind raced to... There's this one speech that Ric Flair gave on this wrestling show.
My whole career, I've always done better than anybody else.
Or he's like, it's hard putting these alligator shoes on.
I dress myself in cashmere. Yeah. I dress myself in $100 pleated slacks. I dress myself in alligator shoes.
And when I saw those jeans, it was like everything that man said was just right there in front of my face, just waiting for me to grab it. I did not try those jeans on. I didn't have to try them on. I knew they were gonna be the right size. I just knew. And the best thing was when I went to the register to check out, the young lady at the register, she was like, oh. She could sense that, oh, he's leveling up. The glow up started from there, man. It was an awesome moment. The first time I wore them was like around the 4th of July. And I was around a lot of, you know, cool people, you know, at a rooftop party. And, you know, I walk in and I had the blue jeans shirt, long sleeve Oxford, white jeans, my red Kohans that laced up with a fresh haircut. I was wearing red, white, and blue. I was the dream. I made Martin proud. I could see like the fireworks popping off. Everybody's just like turning like, damn, I didn't know John had that. I'm not gonna lie, I wore that outfit, same one, to our summer office party. Crushed it. So I'm starting to get brought into new business pitches with Fortune 500 companies. My LinkedIn is just jumping every day now, you know. New opportunities arose, and I accepted a job elsewhere so I could hit that new junior ball in territory. TJ Maxx broke John, was eating ramen noodles. Junior balling John could almost have a planned trip to Peter Luger's on a Tuesday. The jeans brought on a much needed confidence. And when I hit that, my mindset was changing. You realize like, hey, I'm hitting certain goals in my life and certain, I'm hitting these new levels. I need somebody to share this with. I started thinking about my relationship with Lauren and how, you know, when I was at that low point, she was always there for me, but I was in that friend zone. Is there a way to glow up with Lauren? I wanted to take our relationship to that next level. You know, we had joked around in the past where she would invite me out to Chicago, where she was living, and I was like, I can't make it. So this time, I took her up on an offer. I called her bluff. I was like, you know what? Let's do this. Let's make this happen. The white jeans were priority number one in my suitcase. I wrapped them in plastic so that they couldn't get dirty. You only have one shot with this man, one shot. I go out there and we went out to a party at a club. It wasn't until we got to the club where she could see me in my full gear. And, you know, it's among people just living life and enjoying myself that I think it really hit her like, what am I doing? This is an amazing man I have in front of me. And she was just like on me. Like we had danced together in the past, but you know, it's one thing to see someone just really throw it back at you. Sorry, this is a family show. She put it on your boy. And I whispered in her ear, I said, hey, you feeling the white jeans, aren't you? She said, yeah. You know, it's like bait, man. She was hooked. She was hooked. We're now getting married in May. So I say the white jeans have helped me out in all facets of my life. If you sit down and spend time with yourself and really feel that now you are ready to move on from that ramen noodle lifestyle to now capturing your inner Ric Flair glow. I, John Vaughn, suggest that you go out to the nicest Macy's you can go to and pick you up a pair of nice, tailored white jeans.
After the break, Eric has a recommendation of his own. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
I just love John. I really do. I just love John. I just want the world to know. You know, I mean, obviously, in addition to being, you know, John's, you know, your best friend, John is also one of my best friends, and I just adore him. And you know what? One day we are going to have him back on the show, even if it's just, you know, for the two of us to just get on your nerves and antagonize you.
We'll see. We've got a packed slate. I don't know.
Anyway, in continuing with the theme of shout-outs, Eric, I know you have something you want to share with the class.
Very excited. So I actually want to recommend this podcast episode. I heard it a long time ago, but I've kind of like never really stopped thinking about it. You've actually heard me talk about
it. I've definitely heard you talk about it so many times, so many times. Actually, I'm just wondering, like, why? Like, what about this has stuck with you for so long that you must talk to me about it constantly?
Well, like, obviously on the show, we are thinking about, like, what it means to be Black and...
A couple times.
And just in general, like, how folks, like, grapple with their identity. And, like, and I think a lot about that. And, like, specifically, like, how kids process that information.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of, like, touched on it a bit in our episode A for Afrocentric. Mm-hmm. But, like, this episode just kind of... explores that in like such an interesting way. It's from the podcast The Longest Shortest Time.
That's like your fave.
Yeah. I mean, you like it too.
Yeah, no, I love The Longest Shortest Time. Like they, it's just like the storytelling is good. Like it, obviously it's a podcast about parenting, but it's not like a podcast only for parents. Like I listen to it, I get a lot out of it. I think it's good.
Yeah, exactly. It's just about like, it's just great stories, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, in this episode, the host, Hillary Frank, she's interviewing a woman who came across something from her childhood that just, like, showed her that she had started thinking about race and her identity a lot sooner than she thought.
That sounds like there's a twist somewhere in here. Well, I'm excited to finally hear the episode.
Well, I'm glad. I'll just let it play.
My name is Kyria Traber, and I'm a theater artist in New York.
Kyria's mom is white. Her dad's Black. Her parents were really young when they had her, and her dad wasn't very involved. Kyria is close with him now, but back when she was little, he lived in Hawaii, so she didn't see him much.
And my mom was a single mom, and I was an only child, and so one of the tricks that she came up with to keep me entertained was to give me a cassette tape recorder.
Kyria's mom recently sent her the cassette that she used to record on. So between the ages of 4 and 6, Kyria recorded and re-recorded herself over and over again on this one 90-minute tape. I've actually got it right here in front of me. There's a self-portrait on the back of the case, scribbled in pencil with big frizzy hair and hearts drawn all over the clothes. The spine says, "Kyria knows it all." All is in all capital letters. And then... side one is labeled Kyria : issues and answers 88. And side two says Kyria speaks out 88. So on this tape, Kyria recorded all the typical things that kids record.
So
she'd start stories.
The universe caught on fire. So then we did tell mother and daddy.
And quickly end them.
And then everybody was sad, and that's the end of the story.
She'd get her mom to introduce her made-up talk show.
And now, it's Dr. Kyria Traber with Bop Talk. Go ahead.
No, I don't think I want to do this.
And then, one day, when Kyria was 6 years old, she got out the tape recorder and sat her mom down in the living room.
You can kind of hear her in the background encouraging me to start.
Go. Hey, mama. Hey, mama, it's a black thing. She won't understand because she ain't black. She's a white. She only knows the white thing. The white thing. I say, mama.
And I freestyled a rap about race to my mom.
My mama say, you came out of my stomach, so I must know what the black thing is. And I say, no, mama, you gotta listen to me.
You know, I say, it's a black thing. You know, only black people can understand. That's not my exact words, but that's my meaning.
And what was your understanding of it?
Well, if you listen to this song, it seems like I have an understanding of it being cool, of it being valuable, of it being special.
Because, mama, it's a black thing. Hey, mama, it's a black thing. You gotta listen to me. She never will listen. Don't plug your ears. Don't cover your eyes. Hey, mama, it's a black thing. Hey, mama, it's a black thing.
It's also directed at your mom. Did it feel aggressive at the time?
I wouldn't say aggressive. I would say proud. I would say, maybe defiant, but I wasn't yelling. You know, I was asserting myself. And so I guess that's, you know, all our journey as children, right, is to separate ourselves from our parents and find our own individuality. And I guess mine started with being black.
And I say, mama, you don't know what? It's a black thing.
Why did you feel the need to sing that to her?
Well, I remember at the time I was in elementary school and, you know, this is like the late 80s, early 90s in Berkeley, California. Race and being positive about diversity is certainly part of the culture. And so at my school, I know there was white kids, black kids, and mixed kids. And I had a couple of friends that were also mixed, like me. And we called ourselves that. And we would talk about it a lot at five or six. You know, we're mixed. And so I guess that's the thing, is that I'm surprised to hear myself saying it's a black thing, not it's a mixed thing. I was so generally, in my memory, so proudly mixed.
Did you identify as more black than white?
It's a really complicated question.
Yeah.
And it changed. You know, it's changed a lot in my life.
Yeah. And so, like, your blackness came from your dad, who wasn't in your life.
Right.
And your mom was.
Right.
But you look different from her.
Yeah.
And so tell me about how your ethnic identity has changed over time.
Yeah. Well, you know, early on, I definitely knew that I was different than the majority of people, and definitely from the black girls. They had these beautiful braids that their parents did, and they were always really perfectly kept, and they had a lot of them had beads in their braids. My mom didn't know how to do that, and my hair was actually often really messy. And then, so there's this one particular thing that happened in my preschool days that I remember. Another mother came to pick up her daughter, and we were not friends, this daughter, so I didn't know this girl well or her mother. The mom told me to come over to her, and she undid the braids that my mom had done in my hair and redid them. She greased them up with coconut oil and retwisted my hair and then left. From my memory, she didn't stay to talk to my mom and say, this is what I did or this is why I did it. But then my mom was upset after, and I think I felt ashamed. I was like, I had done something wrong. But I talked to my mom, actually, and she said something that blew my mind. she also was getting a lot of comments from adults, and especially Black women. She understood that they were trying to help, that actually she felt like there was a community of people who were raising Black children, and that she was a part of that, and she had support. And the conversation, she said, felt productive, even if they were sometimes had some judgment in them.
Was there a part of you that you felt like your mom did get?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, I think other than my Black identity, there was a sense that, and because I feel this way now, that my mom is the person I can go to say, can you believe this happened? Or like, you know what I mean? And she's the one, no matter what, who's going to be like, yeah, totally. But then there's this giant thing that does make me really different.
And does she get it? Like, if you need to talk to her about, like, race stuff in your life, does she get that?
Yeah, she does. She does. And not without, you know, some work. As I, you know, in my adulthood came to understand my identity in much more nuanced ways, then I had to share that with her if I wanted her to understand, and she was very open to it. And, you know, we've had a lot of moments when our country is having racial conflicts, and I get to talk about it with my mom in a way, I guess it can be really cathartic, you know, because being Black in America can be really painful, and there's a lot of distance and a lot of difference and a lot of feeling misunderstood. And so to be able to talk to a person who identifies as white and say, can I explain this thing to you from my perspective, and have them go, yeah, I'm totally listening, and then ultimately understand as best they can, it feels really good. It gives me a lot of hope.
So, hope you enjoyed that.
I did. I really did. Kyria, man.
Yeah, that was real.
Bars.
It's a Black thing.
It's a Black thing.
So that was actually just a part of a longer episode about how kids and their parents talk about race and identity. The full episode is actually called Mama Don't Understand. And Kyria actually has a podcast of her own called Cheers and Queers. She says it's like a boozy podcast about Black queer life.
Mm.
We'll make sure to link to both The Long Shortest Time and Cheers and Queers in our show notes, so you should check it out.
Yes. So those are our shout outs for this episode. But we are wondering, like, what are y'all feeling? Like, what are you into right now? What do you want to shout out? So please hit us up on Twitter and let us know. We want to know. We are at The Nod Show on Twitter. That's how you find us, at The Nod Show. The Nod is produced by me, Brittany Luce, with Eric Eddings, Kate Parkinson Morgan, and Emmanuel Berry, with production assistance from Wallace Mack. Our senior producer is Sarah Abdurrahman. We are edited by Annie Rose Strasser. Engineering from Cedric Wilson. Special thanks to MR Daniel. Fact-checking by Max Gibson. Our theme music and additional music is by Khalid B., Haley Shaw, Jupiter, Chili Willy, and Kevin J. Simon. And if you were sold on the concept of white jeans, John has some tips for how to pick the perfect pair and keep them clean. To find out more, subscribe to our newsletter at gimletmedia.com/newsletter.